Okay, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on the top of Ted Vav Amud Aleph. The Mishnah is continuing to discuss what we saw in the first Mishnah, that there are items that the Hakel or Hachmir. Now the Mishnah is discussing B'motzi Shemra, the Hakel or the Hachmir. Again, Motzi Shemra is a situation in which there's a fixed payment for the violation, which is 100 shekel. Ketzad, what's the scenario? Echad Shotzi Shemra al Gdola Shebikuna. Doesn't matter if the person was Motzi Shemra on the person that is from a Miuchas family, the Gdolim, the greatest of those of the Kohenek families, Baktanash Bisrael, or even the lowest in the totem pole or lowest on the social ladder within Klal Yisrael, Noten Me'asela. He pays the fine of Me'asela irrespective of the status of the woman. And though again, if it's a woman of higher stature, then that's the Hakel. If a woman of lower stature, then it would be the Hachmir, but it's a fixed payment. Nimtza. The Mishnah now makes a comment as an aside, which is comparing it or really contrasting it to that of Ones Umifateh, where Ones Umifateh paid 50 shekel, whereas the Motzi Shemra pays 100 shekel. Nimtza ha'omer b'piv chamor min ha'oseh. Turns out now that someone who uses his mouth to violate is more stringent or more problematic than the person oseh maseh that actually does the act itself. Shekein matzino. And we find something that corroborates this, which is Shalo Nitchatam Gzar Din Alavuteinu, because the final decree and sealing of their fate, of our forefathers, Bamidbar, in the desert, Ela Lashon Hara, that's what caused them to be pushed over the edge. Shenemar, because it says, by the Chet Miraglim, when Moshe Rabbeinu is pleading with the Kodesh Baruch Hu for forgiveness, Hashem says, Bayinasu Oti Ze Eser Pamim. They tested me these 10 times, and the assumption here, Rashi says it's from the word zeh, we'll see in the Gemara, that this was the thing that pushed them over the edge. This was the straw that broke the camel's back. This was the item that nechtam gezar dinam, implying had it been any other avera, it wouldn't have been so problematic, or it wouldn't have resulted in them being left in the midbar. But because it was lashon hara, it was much more problematic. And here the Mishnah is giving you two indications of the fact that speech can be more powerful than maaseh, because here the speech or the lashon hara that's found by the Meraglim, as well as the lashon hara that's found by the Motzi Shemra, are very severe. Both the repercussions for the Motzi Shemra are greater than those of the person who actually did the act of ones umifateh. He got the hana, he did the actual action, yet his penalty is only 50 shekel. But the Motzi Shemra is 100 shekel, and that partly is because when it comes to the embarrassment that is caused and the damage that is caused by one's speech, first of all, it is very powerful and very difficult to retract and very, very difficult to rectify. And so therefore, the Mishnah is pointing out that distinction between Motzi Shemra and Ones Umifateh. In addition, we see with regards to all the problems that Bnei Israel had in the Midbar, it was only finally with the Lashon Hara that pushes them over the edge and gets them punished to remain in the Midbar. And again, there it's an indication that Lashon Hara was the precipitating factor. Mar says, Mimai, how do you know that that's the case? Dima Mishum Deka Garim Lak Tala. How do you know that the severity of Motzi Shemra is because of the fact that he's speaking Lashon Hara, or that it's through the speech that he's doing the damage, and that's the severity over here? Maybe the reason is that he's trying to kill her. If he is believed and the court takes his testimony seriously, they're going to kill the woman. So maybe the repercussions of him trying to kill the woman are that he gets penalized with the 100 shekel versus the case of the Ones Umifateh, where he's not trying to kill the woman. Dichtev, v'emet haya davar. If it's true that which he claims, that she did not have tulim, that means that she had an extramarital affair while she was ne'areset, and therefore she's chayav mita, rotziu et anara. The result of that will be they'll take the Nara out and she'll be killed for that violation. Amarov, Amakra, they can't read it that way because it says, Kiyotzi Shemra, because the reason that's given for the fact that he has to pay the 100 shekel is because Kiyotzi Shemra, because he spoke falsely and was Motzi Shemra on this woman, and that's what is the cause for the payment or the necessity to make payment. Hashem Ra Shotzi. Because of the bad mouthing or the falsehoods that he produced, that's why he's being penalized over here. And the penalty is not only a monetary penalty, but also that he gets malkot as well. That only serves to reinforce the fact that the severity of the punishment here is because of the Motzi Shemra, And again, indicating this idea that speech is a very powerful type of avera, and it is considered or seen as more problematic than even a maaseh, even though generally our principle is that you only get malkot for something that's a maaseh, not something that's a dibur. Over here you see just the opposite, which again indicates the severity of the motzi shem ra over here. Now, the Gemara says about the chatamat gezar din of the Dor HaMidbar, mimai. How do you know the fact that Lashon Hara was the thing that caused the Chatimat Adin? Maybe Dilma Kati Lo Maleh Sa'atan, an expression that Chazal used in many places, means that their Sa'ah, which is a dry measurement, wasn't full yet. Meaning that they hadn't reached the point at which Hashem said, it's just too much, and I need to punish them. And maybe the reason here that the Lashon Hara of the Meraglim was the cause for the problem is because of the fact that now they reached that tipping point. They already had 9 things. This was the 10th thing, and this pushed them over the edge. So how do you know the Gzar Din was particular to this? Had it been any other Veira, it wouldn't have been a Gzar Din. Maybe it's just they reached the point at which Hashem said it's enough is enough. Shenamar, because we have the Pasuk in Yov that says, Bimlot Sipko Yetzer Lo. It's spelled there with a sin, not a samach, but it means Bimlot Sipko, when he has filled his desire or his sins have reached that tipping point, then Yetzer Lo, then Hashem will do bad to him, or he will be punished for that which he has done. So you see that there is some sort of threshold which you need to get over. Amar Shlakish, Amar Kra, Shlakish says, the Pasuk says, V'yenasu oti ze eser pamim, al ze nitchatam gezardin. The word ze in Chazal is taken to mean, in many places, the ability to point to a particular item. Many other places in Shas, Chazal say, when it says the word Zeh, means that they're actually able to see it and point to it. And similarly over here, it says that, V'yinasu oti Zeh eser pamim, the Zeh is this. It's this particular item. It's, you can put your finger on it. This is the item that caused the problem, and that is the Chet HaMiraglim, and that was because of the fact that it was Lashon Hara, that pushed them over the edge, not because they had reached some tipping point. Tanya, Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Parta, Bore kama gadol k'toach shel Lashon Hara. See how powerful it is, Lashon Hara. Minalan, how can I show you that? Mimeraglim. Uma motzi shemra al etzim v'avanim kach. When it comes to saying something false and maligning inanimate objects, like trees and rocks, meaning a reference to Eretz Yisrael, hamotzi shemra al chaveiro achad kama v'kama. Someone who speaks about a human being who has feelings and who is affected by what you say, certainly, or how much more so, should it be problematic. So it should be a kal v'chomer by the Chet HaMeraglim that teaches you Lashon Hara is a significant problem, because there they were punished severely for saying it about inanimate objects. Certainly when you're speaking about a human being, achad kama v'kama. Mimai, how do you know that's the case? Dilma mishum de Rabbi Chanina bar Papa. Maybe the problem by the Chet HaMeraglim is because of what Rabbi Chanina bar Papa says. The Rabbi Chanina bar Papa, davar gadol, dibru maglim beoto sha'ah. That their statement wasn't simply a statement of Lashon Hara. Embedded in their statement was also something against the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Dichtiv, ki chazaku mimenu. When the Meraglim speak about the people of the land of Israel, they say that they are stronger than us. That's the pasuk says, mimenu. The Gemara here says, al tikri. Don't read it as ki chazaku mimenu. Don't read it as being that they are stronger than us. Ela mimenu. They are stronger than him. Him, meaning a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Kibi yachol. It's as if they're saying, balabayit en yachol otzi kelav misham. The owner of the area can't take his utensils out of there. I mean, they can't kick the Kananim out of our way. We can't get rid of the Kananim, or it's basically a slight of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. It's saying not that they are stronger than us, but really they are stronger than him, stronger than a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Now, the Shita Mekubetzet Odalid already points out over here, the word Mimenu and Mimeno are not spelt any differently, where he says, Gilyon, Ein Chiluk Ben Kriyalich Tiv. There's no difference in the spelling of the word here between the Kri and the Ktiv, meaning that the word Mimenu and Mimeno are spelled exactly the same way. And if that's the case, then there's no real distinction that would make you say that mimenu or mimeno is the correct reading of the statement over here. And therefore, the mifarshim or the rishonim search for a way to understand that which is being said over here. And he says that, first of all, with klomar, al tifaresh, meaning that the way that the Rosh brings it over here is not that it means al tikri, don't read it this way, but rather this way. It means don't interpret it this way. Al tifaresh, don't explain it as being mimenu, rather explain it as being mimeno, because there's nothing in the pasuk that compels you to read it either way, and the nekudot that we have are mimenu. So al tifaresh means don't explain it mimenu, but mimenu means as if mimeno. When you say that we can't overcome them, it's as if you're saying that God can't overcome them, because who is our leader? Who's the one who's going to help us? That's a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So it's al tifaresh is the way that the Rosh deals with it. Whereas he brings then an alternative girsa. He says, ubegirsa gemara yishana, kein ktiv al tikri mimenu. Don't read it as mimenu, ela miyamino. But from his right hand, miyamin shel Kodesh Baruch Hu. The right hand of Kodesh Baruch Hu, which is seen as mincha Hashem nedari v'koach, that Hashem's right hand, which is the one that is strong, the one that defeats the enemies. It says, don't read it as mimenu ela miyamino, but that doesn't really help the situation because it's spelt like mimenu, not like miyamino, but that's a way to deal with the word being spelt or said totally differently. Look at the Balei Tosafot and the Amud Bet. They have a mesora of the Bavli, which is al tikra mimenu rafet, that it is a weak one without a dagesh. Elam imenu with a dagesh. So they have some sort of misora that when it's spelled mimenu, it's done without a dagesh in the nun. Whereas when it's spelled mimenu, it has a dagesh in the nun. And he says, Venu kein. Tosafot says that's not our misora. Shekol mimenu shebetorah dagushim. Venu machliv klal ze beze. Says that doesn't really matter when it says mimenu or mimeno. They all have a dagesh in them, and it makes absolutely no difference. It seems to be that there were different misorot about this. It seems there's a misor of our Gemara that there is a distinction between a dagesh and a rafeh, whereas the misor of Eretz Yisrael was that there was no such distinction, which is the misor that we have, and therefore our Torah doesn't have any distinction between mimenu and mimeno, with the dagesh or without a dagesh. But all of these Mishonim are trying to search for a way to understand the Al Tikri over here. Probably the simplest or easiest way to do it is like the Rosh says, Al Tifaresh. Al Tikri doesn't mean literally don't read it, but rather don't explain it that way. When they say that we can't defeat them, we're not really anything without a Kodesh Baruch Hu. A Kodesh Baruch Hu is the one leading us. He's the one that's helping us to be victorious in all these situations. When you say we can't do it, you're also saying a Kodesh Baruch Hu or a Ke'ilu, a Kodesh Baruch Hu can't do it. And that's probably the likely explanation of what's being said here. But nevertheless, going back to our Gemara, that's a suggestion that Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa's reason is why they are punished so severely over here by the Lashon Hara, not because it's Lashon Hara, but inanimate objects that they punish so severely, but rather because it was a almost kofir bakol over here. Where it says, Ella Amar Rabba Amarish Lakish Amar Kra, Yamutu Anashim Motziei Dibata Aretz Ra'a. It says that the Miraglim, who are the ones who brought back the evil report or the slanderous words about Eretz Yisrael, al dibat ha'aretz shotziu, that the reason that they were killed is because of the dibat ha'aretz shotziu, that slanderous speech that they had neged the land of Israel, again, which is an inanimate object, that's what resulted in their severe punishment. So you see the punishment's connected to the Lashon Hara and not simply the fact that they were kofer b'ikar. Tanya, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Eser Nisyonot Nisu Avoteinu LaKodesh Baruch Hu. Our forefathers tested HaKodesh Baruch Hu 10 times. That's found in the Pasuk in Parshat Shlach. Now, over here, the terminology Nisayon, in general, in the Torah, Nisayon means to test. It means to try or to see if something is really true. And that might be the simple meaning over here, which is that they tested HaKodesh Baruch Hu. They tested him by pushing back against him, or saying that he can't do it, or complaining about the circumstance, and looking for a response from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's why it's called a Nisayon. That's one possibility. If you look on the Shitu Mikubetzet, on the Amud Bet, in Ot Gimel, he brings with regards to one of these items, which is the egel, later on, what she says is, what did they do by the egel that they were testing Hashem? By other items, like the yamsuf, we'll see in a second, and the man, and the water, you could say they were testing Hashem. But the egel, they weren't testing Hashem, they were kofar by ikar. So how can you call that a nisayon? So he brings, v'shamati mipi Rav Yitzhak mitroish, the asara nisayonot, the meaning of asara nisayonot is, haynu asara ka'asim, that we angered a Kodesh Baruch Hu 10 times, she'ichisu at a Kodesh Baruch Hu, v'inam zo'afim, mitargaminan nisisim. The translation to Aramaic of zo'afim, to be angry, to madden someone, is nisisim. And therefore he says the word nisayonot here, not to mean tests, but rather, 10 times that we angered HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that would be a little bit easier to understand in the context of what we're speaking about here. It's not simply that we're testing Hashem, it's that we're angering Hashem in the way that we are conducting ourselves. But then he now enumerates what those 10 are. Shnaim bayam, u'shnaim b'mayim, shnaim b'man, shnaim b'slav, chad be'egel, v'chad b'midbar paran. So here's the list, and the Gemara is going to go through each of them. Shnaim bayam, the 2 tests, that B'nai Yisrael tested HaKadosh Baruch Hu by the yam, is achad b'yirida v'achad b'aliyah. One when they descended, when they went into the Yamsuf, and one when they exited the Yamsuf. B'yirida, when they entered the Yam, d'chtev, amin b'li en kvarim b'mitzrayim, when they seen the Mitzrayim behind them, closing in on them, and the Yamsuf in front of them, they said, aren't there enough graves in Mitzrayim that you have to take us out to kill us here and have us be buried by the Yamsuf? B'aliyah, when they ascended from the Yamsuf, they came out, k'd'ravuna. That test is like what Rav Huna says. Am Rav Huna Yisrael Shabbato Ador Mikadnei Emunah Hayu. They were people who did not have real faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Their belief in Hashem's capacity to help them out was limited. Kederabo Bar Mori. Am Rav Mori Ma'idichtiv Vayamru Alayam Biyam Suf. What is meant by the pasuk in Tehillim Kufvav, which is one of the Pirkei Tehillim that basically goes through a concise history of the Jews. And there, in describing the crossing of the Yamsuf, it says, "Vayamru al Yam bi Yamsuf," that they rebelled on the Yam in the Yamsuf. Vayoshiim the man shemo, despite their rebellion and despite their not being deserving, Hashem brings them salvation in order to sanctify His name or to preserve His name. Milameid sheYisrael mamrim b'oto sha'a, that Bnei Yisrael were rebellious at that time. Omrim k'shem shenu olim mitzad zeh kach. Mitzrayim olim mitzad acher. Just like we're exiting on this side of the Yamsuf, the Mitzrayim are exiting on the other side of the Yamsuf. They, first of all, didn't believe that Hashem would do anything for them. The Mitzrayim are chasing after them, they're stuck at the Yam. They complain about that and say, aren't there enough graves in Mitzrayim? Hashem splits the Yam for them. Then they go through the Yam, and they're exiting on the other side, but they don't see the Mitzrayim anymore. What they say to themselves is, yeah, we're coming out on this side, they're coming out on the other side. They aren't being killed by the Yamsuf. Hashem tells the ministering angel of the Yam, Plot Otam Liyabasha, spit out the Mitzrim onto the dry land, meaning show Bnei So that they have been killed. Is it possible that a master gives his servant or his worker a present, and then he retracts it and he takes it back? So this is the idea, that the Yam was fed all of these Mitzrim, and now he's being asked to spit them back out. Amar lo, ani noten lecha echad u'mechsa shebem. If you spit them out now, I'll give you 1.5 times at another time. Amar lefanav, ribono shalom, klum yesh evet shutoveh et rabo. I don't really have a good position. You're telling me that I'll give you 1.5 times, and yet I don't have any guarantee to that, and I can't really speak up, because how can it be that I go back to the master, meaning you, and make a demand of you when you're the master himself? So Amar lo, Nachal Kishon Yarev. He says, I'll guarantee it through Nachal Kishon. V'yad paltan liyabasha. At that moment, he spit them up onto the dry land. Ichtiv v'Yisrael et Mitzrayim meit al Sfatayam. What do you mean they saw them dying or dead on the Sfatayam? That's the Kayim, what we just said here, the background story as to why they needed to see them dead on the Yabasha, was to indicate to them that just like Bnei Yisrael exited on one side, Mitzrayim did not exit on the other side, but rather died in the Yamsuf. That's what the pasuk says, that lo tosipo nirot otam. You're not going to see them again the way you're seeing them today. That's both literally, because they died, and figuratively, you're never going to look back at them as masters anymore. So now, reward that was given is in the time of Sisra and Dvorah and Barak. And Nachal Kishon is the river that gobbles up the armies of Sisra when Barak fights them and defeats them. And over here in Mitzrayim, it says, Shesh Meot Rechev Barzel. There were 600 iron chariots. And there by the fighting with Sisra, it says that there were Chamot. There were 900 chariots of iron. So that's 1.5 times what was here. So it's speaking to the captains or to the leaders of the groups, not necessarily all the numbers of the population. But I guess, at least with regards to the Rechev, which are the best warriors or the officers, it was 1.5 times in the case of Nachal Kishon versus the Yamsuf. That's to fulfill Kodesh Baruch Hu's promise that the Sar Shayam will be paid back 1.5 times what he had to give up over here. Now, Tosafot over here speaks about how could Bnei Yisrael really believe that the Mitzrayim were coming out on the other side when they were coming out on this side, and why would have it mattered? I mean, truthfully, even if they came out on the other side, they'd be the Yamsuf between them, and they wouldn't be able to chase them down. So then why would it matter at all? So Tosafot comes up with a huge chiddush. Again, we're not going to spend so much time on it, but just to show you the picture that's there, if you turn the Gemara on your side, because you have to remember that mapping in their days had east on the top of the map, not north on the top of the map, so you have to turn the Gemara sideways to see the map and keep the east where Ammon and Moab would be to the east, and Eretz Mitzrayim would be to the southwest, and Eretz Yisrael would be to the north over here. A very crude map, but the Balei HaTosafot point out that they think when Bnei Yisrael crossed through the Yamsuf, they did not exit on the opposite side of the Yamsuf, but rather exited on the same side of the Yamsuf. And you can see that in the dotted line, the picture that they're drawing over here, where they cross through this piece of the Yamsuf, come out on the other side by Marah, and then continue on to Eretz Yisrael. So that shows you that they actually exited on the same side they entered. And that's why the Balei HaTosafot say Bnei Yisrael were worried. They're worried, just like they came out on this side of the Yamsuf, Mitzrayim came out on the other side, and they'd still be able to come after them because they were on the same side of the Yamsuf. Bnei Yisrael never cross literally the Yamsuf to the other side, meaning the southern side of the Yamsuf. They just go from west to east across the Yamsuf in this area of water that protrudes towards the north. So it's a very interesting shita, but it's trying to deal with what we're discussing here in the Gemara. How would Bnei Yisrael afraid that the Mitzrayim were going to come out, and why would that would have affected them? So there are shnayim b'mayim. There are two tests or angerings of a Kodesh Baruch Hu with water, b'mara, when they have the bitter water and they have to throw the eitz in to sweeten it up, u'b'rifidim, where they have nothing to drink, which is the first masa u'miriva, not the mei miriva later on. The Rabbeinu Gershom over here asks, why don't they include mei miriva? I think the easy answer to that is that's because that's after the Meraglim. The Pasuk here is said at the time of Meraglim, and therefore that would be something that was post the Meraglim and shouldn't have been included in the list. They complained to Moshe Rabbeinu about the bitter waters in Marah. And that's the first time that we have the problem of Masa Umiriva. And so both of those cases, Bnei Yisrael were challenging a Kodesh Baruch Hu, again, either testing Hashem in the sense that we don't have water, what are you going to do about it? Or angering Hashem because not trusting in Him that He would provide them with water. Shnayim b'man, two times they had problems with the man, dechtiv al teitzu. Moshe Rabbeinu says, don't go out on Shabbat to collect the man, vayetzu, and people went out anyway. Al totiru, Moshe Rabbeinu tells them, don't leave any of the man over to the next day, vayotiru. And there were people who did leave it over. So those are two tests by the man in Parshat Bishalach. Shnayim b'slav, two tests with regards to the slav. Rishon, b'slav rishon, u'b'slav sheni. The first time they get slav, and the second time they get slav. B'slav rishon, in the slav rishon it says, b'shiftechem al sir ha-basar. That's when they're complaining about not having food in Parshat Bishalach, where Hashem then provides them with meat and man. So the man is during the day, the slav is at night, that gives them the basar and the man. The slav sheni is, abe'asaf suf, asher bikirbo, hitavu ta'ava. They had a desire, they wanted something to eat, and then Hashem brings them the slav. Interesting enough, here it's a machloka between Rashi and Tosafot has to understand this. Rashi claims that the slav that started on the 15th of Iyar, then stayed with them, just like they got mon at that time. The Pashtura Pasuk is that Hashem says, Baboker you're going to get the mon, and Ba'erev you're going to get the slav. Nowhere does it indicate that that stopped. Just like the mon continues, it seems like the slav continues, and that's how Rashi reads it. So then what were they complaining about in Parshat Balotcha, that they want more slav? That's what Rashi says, simply that they wanted lachazman miruba hitavu yoter. They wanted even more meat, or they wanted more of it. I think there are other ways to explain what exactly their complaint was over here in terms of whether it was a daily ration or could they store it for longer periods of time. And that's for another time, but there are reasons to believe that maybe Rashi's right and what their complaint is about here. Nevertheless, the Balei HaTosafot bring from a Rav Yosef Kara, who was one of the commentaries on the Chumash, that says he doesn't agree with that. And he thinks that the slav came on the 15th of Iyar. And in Parshat Balotcha, it's also the 15th of Iyar. And that's a seasonal thing. And therefore, many point to the fact that that is the time period of the migration of the quail of the slav, in a time period where they're very heavy and they're easy to catch. And that's why both times in the 15th of Iyar, the Torah speak about the issue of the slav. And there are two separate incidents of slav. One at the 15th of Iyar, the first time with the mon, but that's not meat or a slav that continued. And then again, later on, in the 15th of Iyar, the following year, where they complain again because they don't have slav, they don't have meat. And that's why they are complaining. So it's a machloket Rashi and Tosafot as to whether the slav continued after the first time. And then the second complaint is something different. Or was it the same complaint, just they got slav for a little bit, and then they wanted it again later on? So that's two more. Then ve'egel kidite, and then we have the sin of the egel, which is obvious what the problem is, and ve'midbar paran kidite, and midbar paran is the sin of the miraglim, so that's also straightforward to understand. And that's what it means, 10 tests, or 10 times that you angered a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Here's the enumeration of those 10 incidents. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Yossi ben Zimra. Mai dichtiv. What is meant in the pasuk at Tehillim? Mai ten lecha, mai yusifu lach lashon remiya. What can it give to you, and what will it add for you, a tongue or a speech of deceit? Amar lo akosh baruch hu lashon. Shem says to the tongue, kol everav shel adam zukufim. All the limbs of a person are upright. Vata mutal, and you are laying down. You are horizontal. All the other limbs of an individual are external, exposed. And you are internal. Not only are you internal, I put up 2 barriers between you and the outside. One made out of bone, meaning the teeth. Meaning the lips. Shem is asking rhetorically, what could I do more for you? What could I add for you to stop you from doing the wrong thing, from sinning? Shem says, I already did so much to indicate to the tongue to behave itself, including the fact that it's laying down, not upright, and that it's behind 2 walls. And what else could I do, or what other indicators could I put in there to tell you that you have to be careful about how you speak and that you can't speak Lashon Hara? Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Yossi Ben Zimra, so another memra from them. Kolam Isaper Lashon Hara. Anybody who speaks Lashon Hara is as if he denies God. Shenemak, because the pasuk says, Asher Amiru Lilshonenu Nagbir Sfateinu Itanu, that they say to their words or to their tongues, Nagbir Sfateinu, let us aggrandize or lift up our lips. Miadolanu, who else is a master over us? Or in essence, they are saying, nobody can control us. We're independent. We can do what we want. And so they're elevating themselves to the status of where they can speak and say whatever they want to say, in essence, being poreko, saying that there is nobody watching over there, or that, of course, Baruch Hu is not going to stop them, and that's the kofer b'ikar over here. Rama Rabbi Yossi ben Zimra, or if you continue from what we said before, it would be Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Yossi ben Zimra, which would be the same Bala Memra that we had before. Kolam esaper lashon hara, Nigaim ba'im alav. Anyone who speaks Lashon Hara is subject to Nigaim. Shenemar, because the pasuk says, Malashne beseter re'ehu, oto atzmit. Those that speak in quiet, in secrecy about their friend, oto atzmit, that individual I will cut off. Uchtiv otam, And it says in Vayikra Chavei, Litz Mitut, that's speaking about the sale of land, that you're not allowed to sell land forever because the land belongs to a Kodesh Baruch Hu and because of the Yovel. But that's not what we're after over here. We're after the translation of the word smitut. Umitargaminan lechalutin. The smitut for permanence, forever, is translated in Aramaic to lechalutin as being something that is final. Vitnan. And we have a Mishnah in Megillah. Ein ben mitzora muzgar lemitzora muchlat. The only difference between a mitzora who's put away to decide whether he's tamei tor versus a mitzora muchlat, where we've already decided that he's fully tamei, the difference between them is priya uprima. The only difference between them is the tattered clothing that he has to wear and the fact that he has to be disheveled and let his hair grow out. So that's the Mishnah. But the important thing over here is it calls someone who is a mitzora muchlat. He's called a muchlat, and that ties into the word chalutin, which is the translation of the word smitut. Now if I go back to the pasuk in Tehillim, that says, when Hashnei Basei Tereyu, the one who speaks evilly about his friend in private or in secrecy, oto atzmit, he I will cut off, and the atzmit means lechalutin. He will become a mitzora muchlat, and that's the idea, the negaim baim al mesaprei lashon hara. And then the midrash, in other places, brings evidence to that fact that that's why Moshe Rabbeinu is afflicted with tzorat with his hand, because he spoke improperly about Bnei Yisrael. And so we see Nigaim affecting individuals who speak Lashon Hara. So now the Gemara says, Amarish Lakish, my dichtiv. What is meant by the pasuk, Zotie Torat Hamitzora? What's unique about the fact that it says Hamitzora over here is because in other places throughout the Torah, it calls the individual either a tsarua, or it calls it tsarat. It never uses the term mitzora. What's unique about the fact that it says here, mitzora? So does that tell you something? Zotie torato shemotzi shem ra. So they see this as being an acronym, the mitzora, for this is the outcome, or this is what will befall someone who's motzi shem ra. So just as a point over here, we're going to see two or three different concepts that are conflated here in the Gemara. One is Lashon Hara, the other one is Motzi Shemra, and the last one is Rechilut, which, if you study the Chafetz Chaim, each one of them is slightly different or nuanced. Motzi Shemra is someone who speaks falsely about another party. Lashon Hara is someone who speaks truthfully about another party, but detrimentally about them. Rechil is one who is a gossiper, one who spreads rumors or trades in information. So all of them are slightly different types of violations, but they're all violations of speech that are impacting or negative towards other parties. So even though before it says, how do you know that a person who speaks Lashon Hara, Negaim Baim Alav, and now Reish Lakish brings that Torata Mitzora, Motzoraz Motzi Shemra, again, even though, again, there are nuances between them, the Gemara here is seemingly conflating them and saying that these evil speeches are all the same thing and they result in tzarat. The Gemara in tomorrow's daf will speak about what the reasons for negaim are, one of which is Lashon Hara, like we're saying here, and in tomorrow's daf we'll discuss maybe what's the common denominator between all these items and what's unique about tzarat. That is the resultant punishment for someone who speaks Lashon Hara. Ramesh Lakish, Madichtiv, what is meant by the Pasuk? Im Yashuch HaNachash Velo Lachash, if the snake bites or stings without the charm of the charmer, Vein Yitron the Bala Lashon, then there's no benefit to the one who charms. If the one who charms doesn't put his spell on the snake, and then the snake bites, then there's no value in the one who does the charming. So la'atid lavo mitkabsod kol ha'chayot u'ba'ot et l'nachash. In the future, all the animals will get together with the snake, v'omrot, and they're going to say, aridores v'ochel. The lion kills its prey and eats it. Ze'ev toref v'ochel. And the wolf also kills its prey and eats it. Gemara in other places discusses what's the difference between Doreis and Toreif. The Doreis is the way that they use their claws to kill, and then they use their teeth to finish it off or to help them, and then they eat it, even sometimes when it's still alive. Toreif is that they use their teeth for killing, and then they eat it after it's dead already. So these animals, even though they're doing things that you would think was quote-unquote evil or terrible, but they do it because that's how they eat. That's how they get their food. Ata mana yishlecha. What is the benefit you get from stinging or biting someone and then killing them? Omer lehem, umayitaron nabala lashon. And the Nachash's response to them is, what is the benefit of the charmer? Again, over there it means, the bala lashon means the one who speaks lashon hara, as opposed to other aveirot, where there's a direct hana'ah, personal pleasure, and maybe even physical pleasure from the violation of the aveirah. When it comes to lashon hara, that's not the case. There's not a direct hana'ah for the individual. It's not that they're having some sort of pleasure out of doing the aveirah. Rather, it's something where the whole idea of the Avera is the hurt that it causes other people, or the negativity, or the Ra that it has towards others. And so the same way that the Nachash has no benefit, quote unquote, from its stinging or biting the individual, so too the person who speaks Lashon Hara gets no direct benefit from doing that. And that's what the Nachash says back. Just like the Baal Lashon has no benefit and still does it anyway, so too, I sting or I bite. And that also goes to the idea that the Nachash is associated with Lashon Hara. And it goes also to the Midrashim by Moshe Rabbeinu. That was the second of the Simanim that Hashem gave to Moshe Rabbeinu, was also the Nachash, to indicate this idea of Lashon Hara. Ba'amareish Lakish, kol ha-meseper Lashon Hara, magdil avonot ad la-shamayim. Someone who speaks Lashon Hara, his sins reach up to the sky. Shnemar, because it says, Shatu bashamayim pihem, their mouths float along in the heavens, Ulushonam talech baretz, and their tongues, or their speech, goes along on the earth. So the idea that, even though their sin or Lashon Hara is in the land, the repercussions of that are felt, ad lashamayim, are felt all the way up in the heavens, whether that means that the avon of Lashon Hara reaches up to the Shemaim, or maybe the other way around, that someone who speaks Lashon Hara causes prosecution or retribution min haShemaim. Neither one of those could be the explanation of what's being said here. Amar Rav Chista, Amar Mar Ukva, kol ha-meseper Lashon Hara, ra'oy l'soklo be'evin. Anybody who speaks Lashon Hara is worthy of being stoned. Kichtev Hacha, it says over here, Oto Atzmit, which we saw before in the Pasuk of Milashne Besetereu, Oto Atzmit. Tivatam, and it says over there, Samtu Babor Chayai, Biyadu Evin B. They made me into the culprit, or they cut me off and threw me into the pit, and then they threw a stone on top of me, or cast a stone upon me. Rabbeinu Gershom claims that that's a reference to Daniel Begova Rayot, where they threw him into lion's den and then they turned the stone over him. But the idea being that samtu, the word smitut, again, is being used in the context of having stones thrown on top. And so therefore he connects the Lashon Hara to the skilat avanim. Am Rav Chista, am Amar Ukva, kol meseper Lashon Hara, mar kodesh baruch hu, en ani v'hu yecholim nadur ba'olam. Someone who speaks Lashon Hara, Hashem says there's no room for me and him to dwell in this earth. Shnemar melashnei b'seiter re'eyu oto atzmit giva einayim urechav levav oto lo uchal. That's the second half of the pasuk that we quoted until now. That the melashnei b'seiter re'eyu, the one who speaks slanderously or lashon hara in secrecy about his friend, oto atzmit, he I will cut off. Giva einayim, someone who is of a haughtiness, holding his eyes up high. Urechav levav, and has a wide heart, meaning that he thinks a lot of himself. Oto lo uchal, I cannot endure such a person. Al tikri oto lo uchal, don't read it as I cannot endure him. The word oto, it was spelled in the Tehillim without a vav in it. Aleph tuf vav, it's pronounced oto as if there's a vav in there, malay, but it's spelled in a way that would say ito. And that's what the Gemara says here. Al tikra oto lo uchal, that I cannot endure him. I cannot endure to be together with him, so that there's not enough room for both me and him in the world. And I might have to do partly with the problem of Lashon Hara, because Lashon Hara is done, as the pasuk says here, in secrecy. So it's hidden from the people that are affected by it. but it's the same problem that you have with the ganav. The ganav is afraid of people, but he's not afraid of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And same so too, the person who speaks Lashon Hara is afraid of the other people, so he does it quietly or secretly. He tells over the Lashon Hara, but he's not afraid of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, because a Kodesh Baruch Hu is the one who's listening to him, and therefore there's no room for me and him in the world, because this individual doesn't care or doesn't take note of the fact that a Kodesh Baruch Hu was there, and that's not enough to stop him or be an impediment to speaking of Lashon Hara. Vika d'matni la gasei haruach. And some people say, not about Lashon Hara, but about the Gesut HaRuach. That's because you can see in the Pasuk, even though the first half of the Pasuk is talking about Lashon Hara, the second half of the Pasuk, Gvai Inayim Ruchav Levav, which is a reference to someone who's haughty, thinks a lot of himself, and then it sees Oto Lo Uchal. So the Oto Lo Uchal can either reference to the first half of the Pasuk, which is the first way we interpreted Lashon Hara, or the second half of the Pasuk, which is speaking about Gvai Levav, or haughtiness. And the truth is that the two could be connected based on what we're saying now, which is the one who speaks Lashon Hara has a certain haughtiness about him because he's ignoring a Kodesh Baruch Hu. He doesn't feel any reticence to speak the Lashon Hara because the Hashem is watching him, so that's a certain amount of Gva Inayim that is associated with acting in that way. And Hashem says, I can't endure such a person, or I can't live together with such a person in the world. There's no room for me and him. Amar Rav Chista, Amar Marukva, Kol HaMaseper Lashon Hara, Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu L'Sar Shel Gehinom. Anybody who speaks Lashon Hara, Hashem says to the ministering angel of Gehinom, Ani alav milamala, vata alav milamato. I'll take him from the top, you take him from the bottom, nidonenu. And between us, we will judge him, or basically punish him. Shnemar, chitzei gibur shinunim. The arrows of the warrior are sharp, im gachalei ritamim. Like the coals of the broom tree. Gachei Ritamim are known to be very hot and enduring coals. And so here it says, En Chetz El Lashon. We speak about an arrow that is similar to Lashon, the tongue, both in the nature of its shape, that the tongue is shaped a little bit like an arrow, as well as the fact that the Lashon and the Chetz are similar in nature, which is once they have released, they can't be retracted. Just like you've shot an arrow, you can't retract the arrow. So too, once someone has spoken, they can't retract the words that they said. Shnemar, Chet Shachut Lishonam Mirma Diber. So that's the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu that says that tongues are, they're like an arrow that is cutting, that kills, and their words or their speech is that of deceit. So you see that the word Chet and Lashon are connected together. Vengibor Elokodesh Baruch Hu, Shnemar, Hashem Kagibor Yitzei, that Hashem goes out like the great warrior. Gechalei Ritamim, Hainu Gehino. And Gechalei Ritamim, which are these coals that burn for very long duration and stay hot for very long duration, is somewhat akin to Gehinom, which is a continuous burning fire. So then if we were to go back now and read the Pasuk, it would be Chitzei Gibor Shinunim. The Chitzei means Lishonam, the ones who speak Lashon Hara. Gibor HaKodesh Baruch Hu, Shinunim will be sharp towards them, Im Gachalei Ritamim, together with the punishment of Gehinom, or the idea meaning that Hashem and Gehinom, or the Sarsha Gehinom, will crush this individual who speaks Lashon Hara. Amar Rabbi Chamar Bar Rabbi Chanina, Ma Taknato Shel Mesaprei Lashon Hara. What can they do to rectify their speaking Lashon Hara? Im Tamid Chacham Hu, if he is a wise person, yasok b'torah, he should engage in Torah study, shenemar, marpe lashon eitz chayim, that the wholesome tongue is a tree of life, bein lashon el lashon hara, and lashon again must be evil speech, because shenemar chet shachut lashonam, like the pasuk we quoted from Yirmiyahu before, bein eitz el torah, shenemar eitz chayim hi, l'machazikim ba. And the eitz over there is a reference to the Torah, because we have eitz chayim here, the machazikim ba, it's a tree of life for those that grab onto it. So the reading of the pasuk will be marpe lashon. The cure or the fix for lashon hara is eitz chayim, is Torah. And if he's not a talmid chacham, then imam aretzu yashpil da'ato. Then he should make himself humble or should reach a point of humility. Shenemar, because the pasuk says, v'selef ba shever beruach. So the translation of the pasuk is perverseness is something that breaks one's spirit. But the way the Gemara is reading it over here, as Rashi notes, is Misha Solefba, one who's caught up in it, V'chafetz L'salka, wants to get away from it, Nishbor Rucho, will break his spirit, meaning he'll bring himself to a place of humility and humbleness. V'achab Rabbi Chanin Omer, Siper, Ein Lo Takana. What are you talking about? Once you spoke in Lashon Hara, there's no fix for it. Shvar Karto David Ruach HaKodesh. Because David HaMelech, in his infinite wisdom and his Ruach HaKodesh, already cut him off or gave him a punishment of karet. Shneamar Yachret Hashem Kol Siftei Chalakot Lashon Midaberet Gidolot. Hashem will cut off all those that speak in flattery and smooth speech. Lashon Midaberet Gidolot, the one who speaks of great things or words of great exaggeration. So over here, he says there's already a chiyuv karet. The problem with this, obviously, is that can't everybody do tshuva? Isn't there tshuva for everything? How can the Gemara make a claim here that someone who's mesaper lashon hara doesn't have the capacity to do tshuva? He's already cut off. That might have to do with what the Rambam says about certain averot, which are averot that a person is nikshal in them every day. And they're so commonplace with the individual that you can't take to heart the problem and to deal with the problem. So it might be not that you can't do tshuva, but it's very hard to do tshuva because you can't bring an awareness to something that people don't think is so problematic because they're engaged in it on such a frequent basis. Or what we said before, that sometimes when you speak lashon hara, the repercussions of lashon hara are so great, there's no way to rectify all the damage that is done by the lashon hara that one has spoken. So therefore, it can't do tshuva. So we have to then amend the statement to say the following. Ela matakanato shlo yavoli de lashon hara. This is preventative medicine. How does one prevent themselves from speaking lashon hara? Im tamid chachamo yasok b'torah. If he's a wise person, he should engage in Torah. V'imamaretzu yashpil dato shnemer v'selef ba shever beruach. Again, the same sukkim, the same ideas that we quoted before, but here in a preventative nature, but rather than a proscriptive answer to one who has already violated the Isur of Lashon Hara. Tana debay Rabbi Shmuel. Kol ha-meseper Lashon Hara, magdil avanot keneged shlosh averot. Someone who speaks Lashon Hara, the sin or the problem is as great as the three cardinal sins. Avodat kochavim, worshipping idols, giloy avrayot, illicit relations, or shvichot damim, and killing. Tivacha, the pasuk we just quoted before, Lashon midaberet gidolot, the one whose speech or tongue speaks those things of exaggeration. Uchtiv avodat kochavim, ana chata hamazeh, chata gidola. That's Moshe Rabbeinu when he's pleading with the Kadosh Baruch Hu about the Egel. Says, this nation has sinned a grave sin. Begiloy arayot, ktiv, that's with Yosef, at Tzaddik, when he's refusing the overtures of Eshet Potifar. B'shvichut damim dichtiv gadol avonim inso. By Cain, after he kills his brother, Hashem tells him what his punishment, and he says that my sin is too great to carry. So now, each of these psukim has the word gadol in the singular. And by Lashon Hara, the pasuk that we quoted before, Kol Siftei Chalakot Lashon Midaber Gedolot, has the word Gedolot in plural. So Gedolot in plural would indicate that there's more than one Gedol, so it includes all these Gedol. But the Gemara asks, Gedolot Ematarte. Gedolot is a plurality which would mean two, but doesn't mean three. So how can you say that it's greater than all three? Hey, Minayu Mafka. And the Gemara's answer to that is, which one are you going to leave out? Each of them has the word gadol in singular, and they have the word gadolot in plural. How do you know which of the gadols to leave out? And since they're all equally plausible explanations, like we've seen before, when it's an equal plausible explanation, we include all of them. And therefore, when it says gadolot over here, it means greater than all those items that say gadol by them, and those are the three cardinal sins. B'marava Amre, in Eretz Yisrael, they have a slightly different view or explanation of this, which is Lashon Tlitai Katal Tlitai. The Lashon, which is three, or third, Katal Tlitai also kills three. And then the Gerson, the Gemara here, is very questionable. The way we have it is, Horeg, Lemisapro, Lemikablo, Uli Omro. Problem with that is, Misapro and Omro seem to be synonymous. And Rashi's Gilirisoy is, Harog, Le Omro, Uli Mikablo. And it seems like to be over here, the Omrim Alav, the one that was spoken about. All right, we'll come back in a second and explain that. We have to go through each of these things. Now, Lashon Tlitai, Rashi over here, it says, Lashon Tlitai is Ze Lashon HaRachil. That is the tongue or the speech of the one who is spreading the rumors of the Lashon Hara, Shehish Lishit, because he's the third party here that is sitting Ben Adam LeChavero, the Galot Losot, that sits between the two parties to reveal the information. So A speaks about B, and then C reveals to B that which A said. So that's what it means that the Lashon Tlitai, the third party or the third tongue over here, causes the problem. And Katil Tlitai, as Rashi says over here, that means it kills the Tlitai. Rashi translates the word Tlitai as the Omro, the one who's the one speaking the Lashon Hara, the Rachil Atzmo. He's the one that's going to get punished here. Shmitoch Miriva, Shonevela Ben Shnaim. Because of the altercation, the quarrel that's going to exist between the other two parties here, the one who spoke and the one who was spoken about, Horgim Zedzeh, they kill each other. Horgim Golei Adam et the Rachil. And then the Golei Adam killed the Rachil because he's the cause of all the problem over here. So that's Rashi's Girsus clearly Omro, because he thinks that the whole sugi here is speaking about the one who's the third party, the Rachil, the one spreading the information or telling over the information. Therefore, it's Lashon Tlitai, which is the Rachil. Katil Tlitai results in the death of the third party, the Rachil, because the Omro, which is the Rachil, gets killed because of the altercation of the problems that are caused to Lemis Sapro, the one who spoke it originally, and the one who, Omrim Alav, the one that was spoken about. That's the way Rashi explains it over here. If you look in the Balei HaTosafot, he brings Rashi's interpretation and then says, V'ani matzati katuv lishnat litai. Lishnat litai is not like Rashi, which is the third party or the rachil, rather she'akodesh baruch hu hikifa in three layers. That's what we said before, that the tongue is behind two protective layers. You have the lips, the teeth, and then the tongue. So lishnat litai means the third level. There's the lips, then the teeth, and then the tongue. It's behind all these barriers. It's way back, and that's what lishnat litai is a reference to. And then it is Katil Tlitai, and then you would have to read it, depending on whether you read it like Rashi or like the Girsa we have in front of us, it affects the three parties involved here. The party of who said or spoke the Lashon Hara, the party about whom it was spoken, and the party who caused the information to move, either because he accepted that Lashon Hara from the party that spoke it, or he's a Rachil and he spreads the information from the party that he received it from to the party that it was spoken about. So that'll depend on the Girsa here, whether you think it's a Rachil who's telling the information to another party that shouldn't have been said over, or it's Lashon Hara, which is the fact that he was Mikabel the Lashon Hara, and then the three parties are the party who spoke the Lashon Hara, the one who received it, and the one who about whom it was said. Rabbeinu Gershom actually brings another explanation, which is Lashon Tlitai Shomer Shamo Me'achad, because the person who says it heard it from someone else, v'amro le'acher, and then tells it over to a third party. So then, havu gimel b'nei adam. There are three parties involved over here. There's the person who heard it, and then the person who tells it over to another party. Whether that's similar to Rashi about the Rachil, where he's telling over the information that he heard in secrecy, and now is giving that information over to the other party. Or does he mean just simply that's Lashon Hara, person who's mikabel it and then spreads it on or tells other people about it, and therefore there are three parties involved. Person who heard it originally, and that person then who passes it on to another party. That's how he explains Lishna Tlitai. But again, that's the Lashon of three over here, so that it may be Keneged Shlosh Averot. The idea of three over here is manifest differently in Marova and Eretz Yisrael, and that's the explanation that we just gave. Amrei Muhammad and Rabbi Chanina, Ma'id Echtiv, Mavet V'Chaim B'Yad Lashon. Death and life are in the hands of the tongue. B'Chi Yesh Yad Lashon? Since when does the Lashon have a Yad to it, have a hand to it, or a handle to it? V'Amalacha, it's coming to teach you. Ma'yad Mimita, just like a hand can kill, Af Lashon Mimita, so too can speech or a tongue kill. Ima Yad Eino Mimita L'Bisamuchla, a hand has a limitation, which is that it can only kill things that are proximate to it. You would think the tongue also can only kill that which is proximate to it. that their tongues are like the arrows that go out and kill that are shot. And just like a chetz can be shot far away and do damage far away from the individual, so too can a lashon do damage far away from the individual. But a chetz still has a limit. An arrow can only be shot so far. Maybe too, lashon hara also might have a limit to how far it can go and how far it can spread. The pasuk that we quoted before, that their mouths float up in the sky in the heavens, and their tongues or their speech is down on the earth, meaning that it reaches to the heavens, that which they say. Once you know that the Lashon Hara can reach Ad HaShamayim, it has no limits to it, then why do you have to tell me about the fact that it's like an arrow? An arrow has a limitation to it. Because the pasuk of Ad HaShamayim just tells you how far it reaches, doesn't tell you how powerful or problematic it is. Chet Shachut tells you that it's a killer, that it can do damage to kill like a Chet Shachut. So then what do you need? The fact that life and death are in the hands of the tongue, or the hands of those that speak Lashon Hara, if you already know Chet Shechut, which tells you that the tongue or speech can be of a killing nature, a person can make a choice. If he wants life, it comes through your mouth or your tongue or through your speech. The one who wants death can also get that through his mouth, his speech, and that which he says. The way the Rashi explains it over here, the one who wants to die by his tongue should speak Lashon Hara. That's what Rashi says. And the one who wants to live, by his tongue, it shows you the tremendous power of speech. It has both the power to be a giver of life, but it also has the power to be the taker of life. And that's the idea of chayim v'mavet b'yad lashon, that life and death really are at the mercy of the way the one speaks, the speech of the individual. That goes to the general principle in Yadut, that whenever we speak about a Yetzer Hara or something's evil, there's nothing that's inherently evil. What we speak about in terms of Yetzer Hara is the potential embedded in that item. That potential could be manifest for the good and manifest for the bad. So the way that we speak about Lashon Hara here tells you about the tremendous power for evil of the mouth of the speech of an individual. But that means that there has to be equally and a contrasting side, the same power for life through speech and through the tongue. So just like Lashon Hara is a killer, and a killer in the extreme in all the things that we said today in the daf, so too the tongue has that same capacity to be the bringer of life and to infuse goodness in the world and to learn Torah. You know, it's all about potential. The mouth and the ability of communication which separates man from animal is both the potential, or they speaks to the tremendous potential of man, but also speaks to the tremendous risks that one has because of that potential that's embedded in their mouth. That's also always the opportunity as well as the responsibility and the possibility of failing in Yadut, which is that we all have drives, we have opportunities. And the question is, how do we utilize those things? Where we utilize them for good or for bad? So now the Gemara finally comes and says, what is Lashon Hara? So please tell me what it is. Rabba Amar, Kigon Damar, Ika Nura Beplanyo. So when someone says, oh, you need a fire, you need a light, go to so-and-so's house, they have a fire there. Amar Le Abaye, Maika Avid, what did he do wrong? Gluye Milta Baamoy, who? He's just giving out information. That's not Lashon Hara, that's helping someone out. That's just giving them information about another party. Just because you say something about someone else doesn't make it Lashon Hara inherently. There has to be something detrimental or negative in the statement. Ella, Demapik Belishna Bisha. He has to say it in a negative fashion or context. Damar, Hecha Mishtachak Nura. The person asks, where can I find a fire? I need a light, I need a fire. And he says, Hecha Mishtachak Nura El Bei Planya. Where else would you find a fire except for so-and-so's place? Dika Bisva Rekavre, because they're always cooking meat and they're cooking fish. They always got something on the fire over there. So that has negative connotations. Either because it's an indication that these people are so wealthy and they're always cooking food, but they're not sharing with anyone else. Or it's an indication of the gluttonous nature of these people because they're always cooking meat and fish and always eating away. But he's, yes, giving them information about where to find a fire, but he tells them the information, he does it in a context or in a setup that is negative in nature, which is that, yeah, they always have a fire there because they're always cooking something over there, which has negative connotations to it. Amaraba, komilta, demit amra, ba'afe mara, leba mishum lishnabisha. Anything that you would say in front of the person themselves is not a problem of lashon hara. Amarlei, so likely the Girsa should be over here, Amalei Abaye, because it's Rabba speaking, it's a student Abaye saying back to him, Koshekein, that's even worse. Chutzpah, Vilishnabisha. So not only do you have Lashon Hara, because you spoke in secrecy about the individual, but you're a chutzpan, and you're willing to say it in front of the person. Not only will not, you'll say Lashon Hara, but you'll say it in front of that person. So not only are you a Misafer Lashon Hara, you're also a Mechutzav. Amalei, Ana Kerab Yossi Svirli. Rabbi says back to my old like Rabbi Yossi, Dama Rabbi Yossi, mi yamai, lo marti davar v'chazarti l'achorai. I never said something that I regretted saying, and I never retracted that which I had said. Meaning that if the person himself about whom I said this information was there, I wouldn't retract it, or when he showed up, if they asked me if that's true, I didn't back away and say, no, I never said that. I said, yes, I did say that. So that already is somewhat problematic to understand, which is, why if the individual is there? Or why if you were saying it and you wouldn't back away from it, why is that then allowed? Or why is that then not considered to be Lashon Hara? So many of the Rishonim point out over here that the speech, what is being said over here, has to be of a constructive nature. The person saying it in order to get help because this person has affronted them or done something wrong to them and they're looking for help, and therefore they're saying it because they want to engage other people to help them. And if the person was here, they'd say the same thing because it's true what they're saying and they need help to deal with how they've been wronged by this individual. Or it's a situation in where they're trying to facilitate or foster the person to do tshuva. And so they're speaking to others to help them do tshuva, or they'd say it in front of that person to cause them to do tshuva. So it has to be that the reason that they're saying these items over here is for a constructive reason. And if you're going to do such a thing, it's worthwhile for you to study halachot of Lashon Hara, Sefer of the Chafetz Chaim, Shari Tshuva, the Rabbeinu Yonah, in order to know exactly when it is permissible and what are the qualifications of that permissibility, because it's both difficult and rare where it's permitted. But if it's permitted and it's a constructive manner, then if you would say it in front of the person because it really is constructive, then it's not considered to be Lashon Hara. Tosfot already notes that it's not speaking about Lashon Hara, where he says, Perush, Kugon Kea Gavna Nunura Be Ploni. In a case where it's a neutral statement, where you say there's a fire in so-and-so's house. The Ika Lamishma Dlo Amra Mishun Lishnabisha. That's a statement that can be interpreted negatively, or it's a statement that can be interpreted positively. Avalimihumai Davar Tantura Chaviro. But if he says something negative about his friend, Afila Yomra Bifanav It Be Mishun Lishnabisha. Even if the person would say it in front of the individual himself, it would still be problematic. It's not about saying Lashon Hara in front of the individual, because that's problematic no matter what. It's something that you would say in front of the person where it's a neutral statement, and it could be interpreted negatively or positively. If you would have said it anyway in front of the Balim, that's a good indication that the statement is not a negative statement and is not a problematic statement. Amar Rabba Bar Rav Huna, the famous saying that's many times misinterpreted, kol milta demit amra ba'afei tlata leipa mishum lishna bisha. Anything that is said in front of three people isn't the problem of lashon hara. My tama chavercha chavra idlei, your friend has a friend, bichavra dechavrach, and your friend's friend chavra idlei has a friend. Or in essence, the information is going to spread. And as Rashi notes over here, shabalim amru avifnei gimel. The Balim said this information or told over something about themselves in front of three. So this seems to be a reference not to Lashon Hara, but more to Rechilut. Rechilut is where you're given information in confidence, or you know information that shouldn't have been passed on, and you go ahead and you spread those rumors, you pass on that information. So in a situation where the original speaker was the person themselves, and they said it in front of three, by saying in front of three, it's already clear that they know that that information is going to spread and it's already made public. And therefore you're not any more restricted from saying over the information because it's already in the public realm. But it's in the public realm because the person themselves put it in the public realm. It's not because somebody spoke Lashon Hara in front of three people that it's in the public realm. It's because the person himself, about whom this information is being given, said it in front of three, knowing that once he says it in front of three, that information is going to spread to the public at large, and therefore he doesn't believe that it's going to be kept quiet anymore, and therefore your repeating of it is not problematic. That's the way Rashi explains it over here. And the Chafetz Chaim says the Tosafot that we read before about the neutral statement is a reference to this scenario as well, which is that when a person makes a statement that can be interpreted positively or negatively, if they say it in front of three people, by definition, that's something that doesn't have negative connotations to it because they know that that information will get back to the Baalim, and therefore they're clearly saying something that's neutral and not something that is negative. The Rashbam in Baba Batra, on the other hand, takes this very literally and says that if someone speaks Lashon Hara in front of three people, then there's no longer a restriction on those individuals to tell over Lashon Hara again. Obviously, the person who said it first was in violation of Lashon Hara, and those individuals who now it's a public matter can repeat it to others, there are many conditions and qualifications that the Chafetz Chaim brings down in order to allow a heter for such spreading of information. And the Tosafot over there, seemingly going against what Tosafot says over here, says the reason that you can speak Lashon Hara in front of three people is because it's not Lashon Hara. Because when you speak in front of three people, it will get back to the original owner. And if it gets back to the original owner, it's as if you're speaking it in front of the original owner. And speaking Lashon Hara, as we saw before, is not problematic when you do it in front of the original owner. Again, that goes against many of the interpretations, including Tosafot over here, as to what the meaning of saying it in front of the owner is, where Tosafot here says it's clearly that he's not speaking Lashon Hara, which is still problematic. So that Tosafot is very difficult, and the Chafetz Chaim asks many questions on it and does not accept that view of the Tosafot, the Halacha. All right, we're going to stop here, four lines down on the top of Tet Zayin Amud Aleph.